that's where asking, even though it's a little uncomfortable for you, even though it feels like a risk, actually can pay off big. And when people do ask, they're amazed. Even if somebody tells them no, at least they've told them what they're interested in, right? So when you make a request that somebody says, no, not yet, at least they know that you're interested in going overseas, having the promotion, doing that different kind of project, trying something new, getting some education. At least there's that interest. And now it kind of, they start simmering on it. They start thinking about it.
That's Linda Swindling on the All Things Risk podcast. Welcome and welcome back to the All Things Risk podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm your host. This is my show. This is where we get to go deep and long form using the lenses of risk, resilience, and uncertainty to explore all types of topics with some very interesting people. Hope all is well. I'm based in the UK, and as a Canadian based in the UK, summer is always a little bit iffy. I'm never quite sure that it fully arrived, and it appears to be ending now anyway. We're moving into the autumn, and I'm hoping for a crisp, clear autumn. However, I'm still basking in the glow of completing the Haute Route Alps, which, if you listen to episode 58, you know it's a 900-kilometer race from Nice to Geneva through the Alps. It's a cycling race, that is. And it sounds cliche. It was certainly a week where I wasn't quite sure what was in store for me. And it was a competition that took me outside of my comfort zone. And in fact, there's a quote by Doug Bradbury, the best rides are the ones where you bite off more than you can chew and live through it. And I certainly feel that way. But it was a week that had or brought to me a number of lessons that I think apply to domains outside of sport and cycling, including the conversation that I'm bringing you in this episode. And we talk about something completely different. We get into negotiation. This is a conversation largely about negotiation this week. And my guest is Linda Swindling. Linda is an American. She's based in Dallas, Texas. She is a negotiation expert. She's also a speaker and an author on the subject. She's spoken at numerous TEDx events. She's also a self-described recovering attorney. And her most recent book is called Ask Outrageously: The Secret to Getting What You Really Want. And among the things we talk about this week is around stepping outside of your comfort zone with regard to asking for things, particularly in a negotiation context, but outside of that as well. And this really underpins a lot of what we talk about throughout the conversation. But we start off with Linda's background. We then get into the work that she's done with a number of so-called high performers, CEOs, and people like that. Before we get into some very practical stuff, we talk about how to deal with complainers. She's also written a book on this topic, so she provides a number of very useful and practical tips around this. How to have difficult conversations, how to approach negotiations. Before we get into this whole concept of asking outrageously, and Linda brings into this her own story, which involves popular American comedian Jay Leno. We get into the kind of classic asking for a raise at work, but also asking for other things that you might want. So it's a conversation that's filled with a lot of very interesting, but also very practical things that I think you can use. And Linda's also very engaging, and I think you'll really enjoy this. So ladies and gentlemen, here's Linda Swindling. Linda, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, thanks, Ben. I'm excited to be here.
You're based in Texas, is that right?
Correct. Dallas.
Dallas,
right,
yeah.
I'd say Dallas.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been to Texas once. I love Texas, but I've only been to Texas once, and that was in Dallas. So there's something about Texas that really intrigues me. So, you know, it has a certain flair about it. I don't know what it is, but
Yeah, it's almost a country of its own sometimes.
You describe yourself as a recovering attorney. So
Right.
I'd love to get into a little bit of your background and how you got into doing what it is you're doing. So that would be that'd be great. Did you grow up in Texas, and how did you get into being an attorney, and why did you
Sure.
decide to recover from being an attorney?
Well, actually, it's really good for your risking. Now, when I was growing up originally in elementary school, I was from a place, and I used to say St. Louis because everybody knew St. Louis, but they didn't know the city. Now everyone knows the city, Ferguson. So I actually grew up in Ferguson where we had all the fighting. We went back to Texas. My dad was transferred. He was with kind of aeronautics type of things and engineering, and went to Dallas and grew up here. And then first big risk was to go off to New York City and dance. So I wanted to be a theater arts dance person and did that for several years growing up, and then actually went to New York to see if I could make it. And stayed there and said, yeah, I can do it. And wow, that's not what I want to do. And thank goodness my parents hadn't canceled the bill for college. So,
Why did you
yeah.
decide that it wasn't for you?
Sometimes, and this is probably a lesson I keep having to learn over and over again, and I actually named my company for this too. Just because you're good at something doesn't mean you have to do it forever. So, I found a quote right before I left practicing law, and it just summarizes all of that. And it was the same that was true for the dancing was Ben Sweetland says, life is not a destination, it's a journey. And so I called my company Journey On. And when I need to remember, it's kind of like the carry-on from Britain, right? But it really is, it's Journey On. Okay, I learned what I was supposed to learn from this. I got something, and now I'm going to journey on to the next thing. And so I have done a lot of different jobs, and law was kind of the final. I figured at least I can do this. So I had a lot of sales type jobs and all through school, and even majored in broadcast journalism before I went on to law school. So very, very eclectic background that it is funny. I bet a lot of your listeners hear that is, oh yeah, well, I guess that does play into what I'm doing now, or I wonder how I could, adapt what I'm doing now to fit what I'm interested in.
That's wonderful. I find that the world's most interesting people are the people that have done a variety of different types of things. And you can see where you combine different skills, and you bring a different perspective on what it is that you're trying to do. And I think that's incredibly valuable. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
When you grow
So
up, yeah, me neither. That's the big question, isn't it? Is what in the world are we going to do when we grow up, and do we have to? But yeah, I've definitely seen that. And that kind of makes life fun, doesn't it?
It
When you're
does,
not so
yeah.
tied into everything.
So you got this legal training, and then did you want to become an attorney? How did that work, and how did you
Yeah,
get
I
to do
did.
what you're doing now?
I wanted to be. I did run out of careers, which is the honest to goodness truth. I was in theater arts and dance, and one time the chair pulled me aside and he said, "So what are you going to do with this?" And I said, "I'm going to run a theater." And he said, "No, you're not." He laughed at me and he said, "That's not
It's
a
hard
fit."
work, isn't it?
Yeah. And he sent me over to the broadcast journalism school or the mass comm school, and I did TV and went, yeah, that's not it either. And so law, it was appealing because I thought, wow, you can get this body of knowledge and be able to really use it and help people. And what it ended up teaching me was something totally different. I didn't walk away with this whole kind of dictionary in my head or encyclopedia in my head of things. It was more, they taught you how to think. They taught you how to learn. And so law was, I was very interested in law and in choosing what I chose to do. It was basically, what would they pay me to do? So sometimes it chooses us, right? And I did employment law and corporate and some insurance. And there's a lot of different laws, you know, in different countries. Well, it's the same in the states. That's what I was surprised about by the United States was every state might even have a different employment set of laws. So it was interesting work and it dealt with people. But after 10 years and becoming a partner, it wasn't what I wanted. I really saw, and I guess a lot of us, you know, you see what the truth is, not maybe what you study. And even though I was good at being an attorney and my clients would refer me and I had good results, I like to get things done and I like them to be able to check them off. And with law, a lot of times I was seeing people and they couldn't, they weren't going to get the result they wanted. So a lot of the people I was dealing with and they wanted an apology, they wanted the relationship to be repaired, they wanted people to respect them. And you know, I had to say, wow, this is the courthouse is not going to get you any of that, right? And even as a mediator, which is someone who's trying to help people settle, I would get them so far after the relationship had gone south or, you know, had been dissolved, that I kept thinking, well, that's not it either. Yeah.
That's the yes, that's interesting. The aspect of if you're working through, for example, if you have a business relationship and you're getting to a point where you're dealing with the contract to manage that relationship, that's already a little too late, right? And it's same with a marriage. I had a guy by the name of Eric Newton on the show, and he was a divorce lawyer. And you know, by the time that couples would go to see him, you know, things had all you know, the marriage was unsalvageable. So, you know, and he wanted to go and actually, you know, deal with the kind of root causes of how it got to that point in the first place. So that's yeah, that's fascinating that you can that you reinvented yourself.
Well, yeah, and I had help, so I'm sure you and many of your listeners have used a business coach or heard about a business coach. I never had. I watched a television show and they said, you know, I hired a business coach, and just like an athlete has a coach, you know, you could have one in your business and in your life. And I went, ooh, that's what I need, right? And so she's the one that really said after a year working with me, I don't get it. We've tripled your practice. You're seeing your new family. I had a new baby. You're spending more time at home and you're still not happy. And she really drilled down it as to, you know, what made me happy. And we came up with a plan on how I could get to happy again. So sometimes, too, it's hard because, you know, explaining to your husband or your family, well, yeah, you know, those 7 years I studied to be a lawyer, and now I'm a partner. Isn't that great? Now I'm going to leave that and do something totally new. And I think a lot of us get stuck because of that.
That is so true. And similarly, we attach an identity to what it is that we are and because
Oh,
of what we
sure.
do. And
Sure,
it's very difficult to let go of that.
yeah,
So.
and the thing is, you've got it. You've done it, whatever that is. And so you can let it go. And I think that, you know, I knew I could make it on Broadway because I went to the best instructors and then I could let it go. And with the law, it was the same thing. My husband, I said, you know, well, I'll never have a paneled office in a bathroom again. And my husband said, well, when you move here to this, you know, spare bedroom we have, do you see that there's a bathroom right there? And I'm like, oh, you're right. You know, so, and you don't have to pay us any rent for that, you know? And I was like, right. You're not going to get sued for being, you know, and I went, oh, yeah, there's that. So sometimes you have to remember that you're leaving it behind. Everybody says, oh, you have to leave stuff behind to reach forward, but are you really leaving it behind? You had it. You can always say you've done it. What else is there?
And as you probably have done, is you bring some of that into what it is you will be doing.
Right. Yeah. I couldn't I speak to some pretty highly technical audiences sometimes, or people that really have some pretty strong degrees or backgrounds, and they don't question, well, she must be somewhat smarter, she wouldn't have gotten the law degree. And also I can argue with them in a way that it's very logical. So a lot of the people I deal with are very logical. And I, as a journalist and performer and all that, I was much more passionate about one side. Now I really can think of different sides. So all of that has been really helpful.
I think we need more people like you, Linda, because I think we're in most of the Western world, everything gets so specialized. You have to, you know, become an expert in this one narrow field in order to have a great career. It appears to be more and more like that. We're actually, I think, we benefit from having more polymaths and people that have expertise in different domains and can kind of join dots and bring people together and see things from different perspectives. And that's incredibly valuable. Otherwise, we get into this sort of blinkered silo kind of thinking, and I think it hurts our corporations, our governments, our major organizations, all kinds of things. And also, it's more satisfying career wise when you can make certain transitions. And I think we need to be more open minded about career paths.
Absolutely, and you're right. Almost from, well, gosh, when my children were young, grade school, they were already being told, you know, by the time you get to be 12, you should pick your lane. You should figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life. And I'm like, wait a second, I'm much older than 12, and I still don't have my lane picked. I think what you're saying is true. It makes for a more interesting life. But then think of all the people who are you know, they learned, they were the masters of whatever technology it was, and then the technology isn't in existence anymore.
Well, it's a way of also managing the risks in your career.
Exactly.
Because it could be the technology.
By taking more risk, by taking a little bit more risk on learning something new or doing something or feeling uncomfortable, you're actually mitigating the risk in your career. You hit it.
Yeah. And you create more options as well, because the thing that's, you know, that's going to be, you know, big and trendy and hot may not be, you know, things are moving so quickly. In 2 to 3 years, that may not be the case at all. So.
Exactly. And I would think universally, if I were going to say one thing people should know, communication skills. Over and over again, we did a huge survey on, you know, high performers, and we've just done one on asking, and on both of them, the communication. What can you do? Are you flexible? Can you communicate? So if that is the path you're thinking, or if you get bored easily, like a lot of us do, or even if you don't, brush up on those communication skills.
Yes. I think there are two skills that are very important no matter what you do, and one is communication skills, and that's verbal and written, and also critical thinking skills. So be able to think logically through a problem and go back to first principles and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
And strategic. Yes. You know, some people hear critical thinking and they think it means tearing it apart. And boy, because some of us want to be right or want to get it done, we forget that there's a broader picture. And it relates to other people, it relates to other things, it relates to business, it relates to the world, whatever it is. If you can try to get more of an overview or practice doing things, if you only read business books, read some nonfiction. Read some fiction, read some comic books, whatever. Yeah. You know, do some things that stretch you a little bit so that you can look at the bigger picture and communicate with a lot of different people.
Yes, I think that's an important principle. We tend to... You're right. We tend to want to be right. And real critical thinking means that you need to be open to the possibility that you might be wrong And you might need to change your mind, and therefore you need to challenge what, you know, your assumptions. And it's also enjoyable, right, to take on different perspectives and
Yeah.
broaden your horizons. As you say, it's a, you know, it's that journey, about that journey.
Well, and Ben, it depends on how, how successful do you want to be? And if you want to be a leader, then you know that you're going to be wrong. It's not even, stop doing the I want to be right. You don't have time to be right all the time. You've got to be right for the moment and make a good reasoned decision. But I see so many people who are geniuses that then have issues with not being able to be perfect and right.
Right. Yeah. Well, it gets back to that identity thing and the attaching self-worth to being right, being the smartest guy in the room or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's
Exactly.
talk a little bit about communication and some of the things that you've studied.
Sure.
You've written a couple of well, you've written more than a couple of books, but the most recent one is about asking outrageously, and we'll get into
Yeah.
that in a moment. But you wrote a book about complainers and energy drainers.
Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah.
I've been on, and I'm not sure if I'm. If I'm winning or losing, but I've started a 30-day no complaints experiment, and
Oh, wow. Good for you.
one of the things though that I've concluded about this is that if I do complain, I can't, if I start from zero, so I complain every day, even on this 30
Isn't that
day
funny?
but
Wow.
what it is forcing me to do is to notice when I'm complaining.
Good.
So
Good.
I'm not there yet in terms of, oh gosh, so I haven't been, you know, I haven't
Right.
not complained the whole day. But I've noticed when I have, because I figure if I start again from zero, the moment I complain, I'll never get this thing finished and I'll be meaningless.
Right.
So
Right. So, may I give you a suggestion on that from
yes.
that book?
Yes.
All right. If you're going to complain and you catch yourself, say, all right, since I'm complaining, it must mean something to me. That's a signal. There's something important here that I want to pay attention to. So then say, so what are two solutions I could come up with? What's my next best step here? And so now you're not just complaining to whine. You're complaining and you say, I'm recognizing a problem. What would I do to solve it? So I think that's where I have a lot of problems with the politics and the everybody's complaining, oh, this is my guy wasn't elected. My guy was elected, he's not doing what I want to do. My gal wasn't, whatever. So stop that and say, given the facts, I see something I don't like. What am I going to do about it now?
That's
And
great. Yeah.
that's Yeah, because why just complain and whine? And you build a team of complainers and you surround yourself with all these energy drainers, and that doesn't solve whatever issue you're having right then with the situation at hand.
Well, the thing I was noticing about this challenge was because sometimes I think it's good to complain or good to notice problems.
Sure.
Right, you know, we don't want to
Critical thinking.
suppress, exactly, we don't want to suppress that in us, but what we want to do is see, can we take some action?
Yeah, and you say, I'm picking up on this. I wonder if anybody else is. So then you kind of test, and that's what a lot of people do when they're complaining. Is anybody else having this issue? Yes. But then the next thing is, so what? What are you going to do?
Yeah, because I've noticed in organizations I've worked with, what you do is you what tends to happen is that you notice something not working, and then a bunch of people, you know, get together and they whine, you know, with each other, and they feel better because, you know, they've got, you know, a bunch of people who share their,
Because it is a way to connect.
yeah, so they connect, but then that's it, and it stops, and then
Right,
every
right.
day they're looking forward to that, you know, 11:30, you know,
Wine
coffee
fest.
meeting yes, with your
Wine and
the
dine at lunchtime or
exactly,
whatever,
that's
right?
right,
Right, that's crazy. So yeah, and a lot of people when so that was also a survey of more than 1,000 when we did that, and we said, what's draining you? And surprisingly enough, Ben, it's not the world according to Linda. So the people that bug me may not bug you. And there were five different types, which we were shocked about and everything else. But the big aha for me on that was there's a lot of people saying, I don't know what to do when someone's just showing up and throwing up all over me. So the best thing you can do with those, and that's the one that comes up the most, the people are whining with no solution. And that's probably the one that bothers the high performers the most, you know, because it's like, okay, so what? So what you can do is, instead of saying, what are you going to do about it? You know, be rude, just nod and listen like you heard them, which is you did. And you listen for maybe 2 to 5 minutes. And let's say it's someone who's reporting to you. You're listening. Is this a management issue? Nope. Or it's a coworker. You're listening. Is this something I should take care of? Nope. And if it is, you take care of it, right? So you listen to it. And then you go, you have to say something that shows you heard them. You've got to show a whiner empathy, because that's what they're doing. Believe it or not, crazy times, they're trying to have a relationship with you. Right. Is that not the weirdest way? Right? And so then you just kind of say, wow, that sure sounds rough. What are you going to do? I don't know what I would do if this was my problem, which signals it's not my problem. What are you going to do? And let them come up with something. And they will come up with something that fits for them. Or what will they do? They will go away. And either one is a win, right? And even if they say, well, that's why I came to you. You always know what to do. You say, wow, yeah, I don't know what I would do here. You know all my advice. Well, I tell you what, when you have an idea, I have two ideas, come back and I'll help you think through them. I'll help you weigh them. But then that still makes you approachable without taking it on. And I think that's what's hard for a lot of the people that you have listening to this about taking risks, because, you know, low performers typically don't listen to podcasts. They typically don't listen to webinars. They typically don't try to develop. And most of the people that are involved in this are saying, what do I do? Well, you ask them a question. You acknowledge that you heard them and say, gosh, that's tough, man. Tough gal. I don't know what I would do. And what would you do? So that was really good knowledge for me, because I was not doing that. I was solving people's problems that, gosh, I don't have to.
Yeah, that's so that's very powerful. That's very powerful, because I think a lot of whiners, they're also, there's a comfort in the whining, right? It's a learned helplessness, you know. It's like, you know, we tried this 7 years ago, it didn't work, you know, this kind of thing.
Well, and we all do it. And I think that's the other thing. And, you know, your listeners are welcome to go and use any of those tools at stopcomplainers.com.
Okay.
There's even some videos there. I have a lot of problems with people who whine and don't get things done. But you'll find you're one of those five styles. You either whine, or you complicate things, or you become a prima donna, or you maybe you really become kind of a commander and controller. I doubt anybody listening to this is this, but you might be facing a toxic, someone who's just narcissistic and has no conscience.
Right.
So, you know, and I think that helped me too, was to find, gosh, there's just some people that they're not stressed. This is what they're trying to do. They're just trying to drive you crazy. That's when they feel the best.
And you just want to stay away from that type of individual, I would imagine.
And that, again, goes back to questions as to, I wonder why this person is doing this. Are they doing it for stability, which is what a whiner would do, try to, have a better relationship, or a complicator, try to make things stable, controlled. Or are they trying to do this to get some attention and get stuff done, like a prima donna would do, or a controller would do, rawr, bulldozer type of person. So if you can just slow down and ask yourself that question, wonder what's going on here, instead of how am I going to react, that what's going on here will really help you.
That's very helpful, Linda. I think that's going to help a lot of my, it certainly will help me, because I can think of one or two situations at the moment. So I'm definitely going to check that out. That is great. I'll look into that. Let's talk about negotiation, because the negotiation really, and one of the themes of the show, it is something that involves a lot of uncertainty. You know, you've got two sides that it can. Yeah.
Wow. And it really can.
You know, we don't know how it's going to turn out, and we negotiate certainly at work, but we also negotiate with our children, with our spouses, with our extended family, with our friends,
everyone.
With everyone.
And, you know, Ben, you're hitting on something a lot of people don't hit on. They don't grasp. Everything is a negotiation. You know, if it's either that or it's begging or laying, you know, playing doormat. And so I think another big surprise was people are so worried by the word negotiation.
Yes.
So I'm going to say it a couple of times, negotiation. Mm. Yeah, it's not a swear word. Mm. So how do you get around it? First off, you know, you say, what is a negotiation? Well, all it is, and this is especially true, women, listen up, because apparently we really get offended by the word negotiation and it shuts us down. All a negotiation is you or I are making requests of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make a request and I respond and I make a request back. And then we see if there's a fit. Is there something here that, you know, we can come to agreement with? And if so, what does that agreement look like? So it's a series of you asking me questions or making requests and me responding and making my own request. And at the end of it, you know, we either decide, yep, that's something I can live with, or, you know, it's not something I love, but I can deal with, whatever that is. Or, yeah, that's not going to be good for me right now. And if we can just get into that mindset and then start practicing that philosophy everywhere, we're so much better. We make this big buildup. Oh, it's the house negotiation, or I'm going to negotiate with my boss or my spouse. No, just start negotiating now on little things and go ahead and get used to it, so that when you do something big, you're not, it feels the same. And it always does.
Right.
You know, it always does.
I feel that there's something really powerful there. And it translates. I used to work in management consulting, and it was always, you know, it was always a big thing if, well, we have a project and we're pitching the C-suite, right? We're pitching the CEO and the CFO and so on. And it's almost like these are uber humans. They're not humans. They're uber humans. And we have to act in a certain way. They're gods. We have to act in a certain way. And we've got to show some deference, or I don't know what, you know, what,
okay,
what it is.
Okay, and that's, and that we get intimidated.
Yes.
Right? And so I worked with CEOs for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That was my job. I ran CEO groups, and I also met with them one-on-one in coaching sessions.
Yes.
So what CEOs most want is they want their problems solved. Mm. They do not care what race you are, the good ones.
Yes.
They do not care how old you are. They don't care if you're a woman or a man. If you have some idea on how their problem could be solved,
mm-hmm.
is there a way to make them more money? Is there a way to not cost them as much money? Mm-hmm. Is there a way to keep their good people? Is there a way to recruit good people? Is there a way to make sure that, you know, the workplace is safer and the manufacturing goes smoothly? Great. And honest to goodness, if you speak in the language of questions, which is what most C-suite people do, they have short, sweet questions, and you can get them to think about, you know, yep, that could be a problem, or this would be a way of solving it, and they trust you. Then they're going to go with you. That's the secret to C-suite selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, selling to the C-suite, what do? Well, you go in knowing what you bring to the table. You go in ready to listen to them and see if, you know, I think this is your problem. Is this it? Yep. Here's a couple of solutions. Would those fit for you? Nope. Okay, well, I'm not your person.
Right.
I know somebody. Or if you go in and you say, am I heading in the right direction? They say the right direction, but not quite it. Okay, let's explore some more. That's the kind of thing that they want to hear. They don't want you to show up. Again, that showing up and throwing up doesn't work here either.
Yes, yeah.
Right? They don't want you to show up and say, here's all the benefits of everything I do.
Yes.
What they want you to do is get to know their situation and see if there's a fit.
We even have a saying here that that I love, which is even worse, is when we talk about complainers and energy drainers, putting a turd on the table and walking away, or it's like putting a problem on the table and walking away.
One of my friends, Kristen Arnold, told me about no plops, P-L-O-P-S, which is very similar. And basically it's, you know, you throw out an idea or you throw out a problem and then you just walk away from it. Mm-hmm. You don't pick it up. You don't give it a SMART goal or something along the lines of who's going to do what with it and by when and how are you going to know. You know, you've got to do something with that or it's a plop. It's just a big old turd. It's a big old nothing that then later people say, well, I told you about that. No, that didn't solve it. So are we going to leave it there or what are we going to do with it?
Yes. I'd like to take it back a little bit to negotiation because you got on this sort of CEO, which is very interesting. But I think practicing negotiations, you're right, practicing negotiations on a regular basis probably makes us better at them. What are some of the things that people can start to do to be better at negotiating?
Okay, so let's say you go to a store, a grocery store, and one of the things that people are you ready for this? Because this was shocking to us. It was shocking.
A shocking result.
Yes, a shocking result was what do you think people will not ask to do the most? Do you have any idea?
Not asked to do the most.
Yeah, they will refuse to ask. Is it to borrow money? That would seem like
that'd be
it,
up there,
it?
Yeah. Borrow or ask for money.
Ask for a raise.
Yes.
Yeah. No. They do not want to ask to cut in line or break the queue. You know, they don't want to get in front of somebody in a queue. So people are all lined up, all in a queue, ready to check out with their merchandise. People would rather ask someone to borrow money then ask them to cut in line.
Wow.
That's nuts.
That is nuts.
And I want you to think about...
this is a survey in the U.S. primarily?
Yes.
Or? Yes.
There were others that took it, and everyone to a T said, yep, I won't ask to bother someone like that. So I think about the times when I've been at the grocery store, you know, at the market, and I have a cart full of things or, you know, a buggy full of things, whatever it is, right?
Yes.
And I look around for people to go in front of me because I'm so embarrassed. I have so much stuff and I see someone that just has one or two or five. I have them go in front of me.
Yes.
But what we're saying is most of us wouldn't say, hey, I only have one or two things. May I go in front of you? That's nuts.
It is.
So one of the things that you can practice is going in front of asking people if you can go in front of them with one item. And how do you have that one item? Well, you picked it up to test this. You know, you take go get a package of gum or something and say, I just have one item. Would it be okay if I went in front of you and see how it feels? And if somebody says no, then you've practiced hearing no. Now then you can improve your odds. There's a study that says, you know, people, they use this and then they've repeated the results on making copies, photocopies, and getting in front of someone. And the word you use is because. You give some sort of explanation. So may I go in front of you because I'm late for an appointment, because I have someone waiting, because I don't like waiting in lines. Any of those work, but you need to have the because. So people are even more likely to allow you to cut in front of them. So that was very interesting. I'm going to get you ready. I'll give you some more practice tips in a moment, but let me get you ready for hearing no. Are you ready, Ben?
Ready? Yes, I am.
Okay. No, you can't have that. No, No. What a crazy request. No. Okay, then did you survive?
Of course, of course.
Yeah. And if you're not hearing no, you're not asking for enough. You almost want to ask for until you hear no. And when you hear no, you say, "Huh, I just heard you say no. Can you tell me what that's about?" And just let them speak. And if it's no to a raise, if it's no to a parking spot, whatever it is, listen to what they say. Sometimes, have you ever talked yourself out of something? Sure. Sometimes they'll say, "Well, I guess that would be okay." Other times, they'll give you some really valuable information so that when you make your next request, you know how to arm yourself a little bit better. Yeah,
Yes,
so.
that's true. It's a very uncomfortable feeling for many, though. So
Well,
it's
so you have to practice. You have to practice. And honestly, if you hear that word no, you can go, "Okay, there's my no. I got my no for the day," right? The other thing is, ask, so many of us were taught as young people, or maybe we taught our children, don't talk to strangers. Well, start talking to strangers. Ask them questions and see what they say. Even if they look at you like you're crazy, that's okay. That's one person. That's one result. You're doing an experiment. You're just asking to see. So, what do you think about this brand of bread? I'm thinking about buying this. What about this?
Yes.
Ask
I love
them.
experiments.
Sure. What do you think about this outfit? Do you like this outfit? I'm thinking about buying it. It doesn't matter. Just ask and see what happens. See what people do. You'll find across the world, most people are willing to help you. Most people, if they can help, they may not know the right answer, but most of them will try to help you.
That is true. That's true. And in an office environment, it could be, you're printing out a virtual novel for a big meeting or something, and
Yes.
it's going to take you 20 minutes, and some poor soul has got, one scan to
One
do,
page, right?
and you feel terrible. Please go ahead and scan your document.
Exactly. And you do it in a heartbeat. So please do that. Please get ahead of me. And it's just polite. Oh, that's one other big aha. A third of the people would turn will turn you down if you're inconsiderate or impolite. One third. Nuts. It's what our parents told us, right? Be nice. Be polite.
Absolutely. That's great stuff. That's really useful. Let's get into so let's get into asking outrageously and
Okay.
what that actually means. What does that mean to ask outrageously?
It's asking outside your comfort zone. And even if you wouldn't normally do it, you go ahead and you ask. And you push the envelope just a little bit. You take a risk. I didn't ask outside my comfort zone.
Yes,
And
I listened to that story,
did
so it'd
you?
be great if you could share that
Wow.
as well with my listeners.
So we had the opportunity to be in a studio audience of the old Tonight Show with Jay Leno when Jay Leno was the
For
host.
my non-US and North American
Yes.
viewers, he is, a major icon, like super superstar.
Right. And a talk show host in the evenings. And he's a comic now, has his own. He's a great guy,
Really
very
funny
friendly man.
comic, by the way. That's
Hilarious. And I watched him live and really, I didn't see any notes. And he did a 90-minute monologue with no notes. It was shocking. So anyway, he comes out after the warm-up, kind of comedian or whoever warms you up, and then he comes out and takes questions from the audience before he did the live show, before he did the Tonight Show that night. And someone had told me, "Hey, he will do this." So I was prepped with my question, and I had something I really wanted. And then I did the nice, safe question, so he would like me. And that's what I'm finding. A lot of people have this nice, safe question, and they hope to get into the big question. So the nice, safe question was, I said, "What do you like about your job?" Or I said, "What's difficult about your job?" And I thought, well, that'll make me sound smart, and then I'll ask him for what I really want, my follow-up. And so he said, "Well, I don't know. What's difficult? I get paid a lot of money. I interview famous people. I drive really fancy cars." And before I could do part two, the thing I really wanted, he moved on. And the lady he pointed to just away from me said what I really wanted. She said, "Jay, can I get a picture?" And he said, "Sure, come on down." And as she's going, "Ah," and running down, he turns back and looks at me and he says, "That's what you really wanted, isn't it?" And I nodded and I started rising and he made this gesture and he said, "Well, she asked."
Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I felt so small. And of course, I'm there with lots of friends. And, and that was the thing. I had the opportunity, didn't I? I was the one. I was first. The opportunity, he was going to grant that opportunity to me, but I blew it by not asking for what I really wanted. And so it was because I wanted him to like me, because I wanted, that safe question first, that I didn't ask outside my comfort zone for what I really wanted. And people do this all the time. They, a third of us have done like I did, where you knew what you wanted, you could have asked for it, you didn't, and then you saw someone else get it. So maybe it was an overseas assignment, maybe it was some new project to work on, maybe it was for a raise, maybe it was a promotion, whatever it was, there was one, or there was a limited amount. You knew about it, you could have asked for it, you didn't, and it went to someone else. And that's where asking, even though it's a little uncomfortable for you, even though it feels like a risk, actually can pay off big. And when people do ask, they're amazed. Even if somebody tells them no, at least they've told them what they're interested in, right? So when you make a request that somebody says, "No, not yet," at least they know that you're interested in going overseas, having the promotion, doing that different kind of project, trying something new, getting some education. At least there's that interest. And now it kind of, they start simmering on it. They start thinking about it. So then maybe later it is the right time, or they'll come back to you. It happened when
I've had
I've
that
had it.
with podcast guests, you know, some
Yes.
famous people, and it was come back when you've got, 50,000 Twitter followers or something like that, which
Right,
is
right.
okay. I will.
But that's not a no. What was
Yes.
that? That was more information,
Yes. Yes.
right?
Yes.
And so you said, okay, so it is possible once I blank, whatever it is.
Yes. Yes.
And some people, believe it or not, this happened just with getting this book written. I asked a friend. I said, "I'm going to self-publish this because I just did what you just referred to. I had done a TEDx audition at SMU, and then they had chosen me for their big TEDx talk in the fall." And I said, "I'm thinking about doing this book." And she said, "I would go to my publisher on that one." I said, "Really?" And she said, "Yep, that's where I would go." And so, sure enough, I asked. And the next week, I had, "Can you get us this, this, and this? We want to do the book."
Nice.
I asked for endorsements. And some of the people you would think, somebody who were just really similar writings and everything else, said no. But guess who said yes? Dan Pink, who's a huge author, on business books in the US and globally. He said yes. Some of the other people, I had a lot of endorsers that said yes that I thought, "Wow, are you kidding me?" And one had even one of one had told me, somebody else had told me he would never do that book. And I just asked, and he said, "Okay, send it to me. Let me look at it. It's good. Let's do it." So sometimes, even if people tell you no, you have to ask.
Yeah, that's so cool. And you'll get no's, right? That's part
That's to
of
be
the
expected.
yes.
That's what you already have. You already have a no, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So
Once you
what's the
hear it,
difference?
that's right. Once you hear it, a couple of times, you get a little bit insulated, and you're not afraid to, just give it a shot. So,
Yeah, now, do you have garage sales or yard sales
Yeah,
in the UK?
we call them car boot sales. So a
Car
boot
boot sales,
is your car
yeah,
trunk. So
the
they
trunk.
you, yeah they have these things in fields, and people bring their old stuff in their trunks of their car boots, and then they would have these sales.
So different cultures, even different parts of your country, whatever country you're in, have different beliefs about bartering and about offering for higher or lower amounts. And sometimes it's just the way you were raised in your family. So one of the ways I got over, you know, feeling like I was being greedy, because I was brought up not to be greedy, not to ask for too much, you know, get seconds, that type of thing, was I actually went to what would have been a boot sale, but here it was garage sales and yard sales. And I would only put a certain amount of money in my pocket. So let's say I had my checkbook with me and $100 in the car, $50 or $20, whatever it was. As a young mom, I probably only had 20. I would only put five in my pocket. And so when I would go in, I'd say, well, I only have $5 on me, which was true, right? And I'd say, I see this says $35. Could I have it for five? And if they said no, I didn't need it that much anyway.
Right.
Or if I really wanted it and they came to 15, I'd say, well, I've got some money in my car, you know, if it was $5 or $10 more than what I had, whatever. But that practice of hearing no is what got me over it. So maybe if you weren't raised that way, if it's impolite and you know that it's important to you to start asking for more, go somewhere, go to where there's strangers. I went to different neighborhoods than mine. Go practice. Do you have flea markets there as well?
Sure. Yes.
Kind of. Yeah. Go practice in a flea market. You will never see those strangers again.
Right.
And ask courageously. Ask, you know, we have coupons where, you know, the coupon comes on September 1st and it's October 30th. Ask them, say, will you honor this? I know it's about to be the sale. Just ask.
Yeah, that's right. And other cultures that, you know, that have more of a bargaining culture.
Sometimes.
If you go to Africa, Asia, Latin America, you can go to you can go to markets and you know, they'll kind of fleece you if you're a tourist. And I even though I you know, some of the stuff that you might buy is super cheap, there's something about paying over and above the kind of going rate that I don't like. I remember
it's
one time
I
remember one time that I was in Africa, in West Africa, and this guy came up to me on the street. He was selling these masks, these carvings. And they're, you know, not bad, but I didn't really want to buy them. I didn't want to buy them, actually. I actually wanted the guy to kind of leave me alone. You know, he said these were 5,000, and this was in French West African Benin. CFA francs, so 5,000 francs. And I'm like, how much, you know, how much do you want? And I said, no, I'm not interested. Well, how much do you want from them? I'll say, you know, I said, 1,000. And he kept following me and is like, okay, well, 4,000 for three, two. And then he came down to 1,000. I'm like, well, I guess I have to buy these now.
But
I got, you know,
right?
And then, you know, wow, you got a great deal, this, you know, so on and so forth. So, you know,
it's a game.
Yes.
And, you know, for some of us, well, for most of us, actually, 2/3 of us, it's easier to negotiate for someone else.
Yes.
Ask on behalf of someone else than it is for ourselves. For all sorts of reasons, probably. But how do you get around it? Because, you know, you have to ask for that raise you. You can't ask. So you kind of trick yourself on that one.
Okay. Let's talk about asking for a raise. Let's talk about how to do that.
Yeah. Well, asking, I'll start with, when you ask for yourself on anything, knowing that 2/3 of us would rather ask for someone else, how do you talk to yourself?
Right.
One of the things you can say is, huh, who else will this benefit? So if I speak up in a meeting, it's going to benefit the people who are too shy to speak up, and maybe a good decision will be made. If I'm asking for a promotion, like we were just talking about, maybe some other people who think they can't be promoted might want to be promoted. Mm-hmm. If I'm asking for a raise, who else does it benefit? Well, maybe it benefits my family. Maybe we can move out of our flat or our apartment and we can move to someplace else. Or, you know, if I ask for more vacation, maybe I can take a proper vacation this time. Whatever it is, you know, who else is going to benefit? So that may be one way. But on asking for a raise. This is probably the thing I've been interviewed on the most for TV and radio. What do you do to ask for a raise? The very first thing you don't do is you don't, again, show up and throw up as a whiner and say, I've been here 3 years and I
I
haven't
deserve
gotten
this. Yeah,
a
yeah,
raise and I
yeah.
deserve it. I've worked so hard. No, because remember, you've already made that deal. That deal's in the past. When you took your paycheck, you said what you're paying me is appropriate for the work I'm doing. You accepted that agreement, right? By signing that, getting that pay. So what do you do instead? You say, boss, just like for the last 3 years, I've accomplished these things. I'm going to build on those and accomplish these next things that are going to help the business. Because you have to know why people tell you no. We talked about no, but why do they tell you no? It's not because you didn't give enough information, and it's not because they don't have money, and it's not because it's the wrong time. The reason why people tell you no is A, they cannot give it to you. It's just not within their power, right? So in Texas, there's this, we have chicken fried steak here, which is, like a deep fat fried steak that very southern. It sounds horrible until you've had some pub grub and you go, yeah, okay, I get it, right? But chicken fried steak, you cannot go to a place that sells hammers and nails and hardware and say, may I have a chicken fried steak? It's just not going to happen. When I was a lawyer, I already told you can't say I want an apology, I want someone to respect me, correct? They can't give it to you in the courts. Well, it's the same here. If someone can't give you a raise, and you're asking them, or they can't give you a workaround on a project or help you, then they can't do it. It's inappropriate. It's not the right thing to ask them because they can't do it. They have no authority, or they can't. Okay. The second thing, though, is they have to like and respect you, and that you can do. So if they don't like and respect and trust you, they're far more likely, it's one of the top two reasons, to say no. And the last one is you got to be able to answer questions about why you're asking. So when they ask you good questions, you need to at least know why you're making the request and know some good reasons to support it. So those are the reasons people say no. So think about it. If you've talked to your boss and you say, boss, it's time for a raise. I've done all these great things. I'm going to continue to do all these other great things for this company. I'd like a raise that's commensurate with, that matches what I'm doing. And you give your boss the history of what you've done. Now think about it. Is it appropriate? Yes, I've proven. It's not just I've got a track record. I'm going to do stuff in the future. And does your boss like and trust and respect? Yes, because I've had a good working relationship with you. I've problem solved whatever it is. I've added value. I'm going to continue to add value. You can trust me based on my past experience. You can trust me. Now he or she can go to his or her boss or board or committee or whatever and say, what? Hey, I've got someone. It is appropriate. We need to give him or her a raise. We can keep him around. Oh, now you're not putting your boss in a bad position. So now it's far more likely that you're going to get a yes, or at least the boss will be thinking about, that is right. This employee has been around. They have done these great things, and I trust them to do those in the future.
I think that's the very, very great advice. You touched on a couple of interesting things, and maybe this goes off on a little bit of a tangent, but you talked earlier about CEOs want their problems solved, and actually, why are if you want respect in the courtroom or whatever, that's not really the problem. That it is that it's not appropriate to ask for respect in the courtroom, because we're not that that's that train's gone now. We're here talking about a contract or a legal agreement or whatever. But going back to negotiation, I think you can probably use that technique, kind of reverse engineer that technique, and find useful things that the other side wants that isn't going to cost you very much, because actually maybe they're just looking for a little bit of
That's the
respect.
secret.
Maybe they're looking for something that doesn't cost you anything, but it's the real reason behind their ma why they're making a certain request is to solve an underlying problem.
Exactly. And remember, you're not negotiating with a company. You're negotiating with a person who works for a company, right? So we're all people. And sometimes it's to make that person look good to their boss. Mm. They can't tell you. That's why, that's what would really be helpful here. Mm. So what you can do, though, is live in that question. Live in the question. Always be asking to seek knowledge and know what your next step is. And if it helps, I mean, even when you're under stress, you can remember that one acronym. I'm not big on acronyms. I think they're silly sometimes. But occasionally they help you think when you're under stress or you can't remember anything. And so if you can at least remember ASK, you know, ask your questions. And it's all about, how do you ask questions? One is, what am I aware of? Well, I'm aware of, and you're just asking yourself, what am I aware of? Huh? Well, he's pretty heated. He's pretty upset. Or she seems kind of confused. Or she seems this. Or, you know, even if I get really stressed, I think, okay, what am I aware of? Well, my heart's beating really fast. I'm panting. Slow down the breath. What else am I aware of? Well, that's a green wall. I mean, when I get that stressed, what can I be aware of in the environment? So whether you're under stress or not, that's the very first thing. And S is for seek. You've got to seek knowledge about what's going on. So a good question that I ask a lot is, okay, if you could get anything you wanted out of our discussion today or our negotiation or our relationship, whatever it is, what would that be? What would be a win for you? You know, if you have someone who's more visual, you can say, if you could wave a magic wand, you know, Harry Potter it, right? What would you want? And then have them describe for you what they would want. And before you start nodding and responding and everything, just say, huh, what else? How would that look? What would that feel like? How would you know you got it? You know, just those open-ended what and how questions. And get knowledge, because you're going to hear, it's as they talk, you're going to hear what's really important. And then remember the K. And the K is for know your next best request. Know your next best step. What's next? So those those help.
That's useful. Yeah. Could we just touch on how to have difficult conversations for a moment? I know that we're getting close to needing to wrap it up, but I think that some of this transfers to it could be dealing with an underperformer. It could be something in your personal life. You know, raising an uncomfortable you know, problem topic. With a top topic with you know, with your you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, with you know, a close friend, whatever. We're also, I think we have the same sort of thing in terms of asking outrageously. We just, oh, I'm dreading having to tell this person
that.
Yes.
And it makes it worse, right? Because then you never really build it up. You don't talk when it's low level, which is crazy. We're crazy like that. We just hope magically it's going to resolve itself. It never does. So the first question would be something along the lines of, I noticed you're not quite yourself. I noticed you seem a little agitated, or I noticed you seem, and you choose your word. You don't say you're acting like a jerk, because that's fighting words, right? So I noticed you're not showing up for work on time. I noticed when I asked about the kids, you bristled, or you made a face. You know, just play back what you saw, and then just say, what's up? Like, well, what do you mean? Well, when I ask about our son, you kind of made a face and shook your head. What's going on? So ask about that. So you make a statement. It's just an observation. It's not, you're really a jerk. No, it's, you know, I noticed that this happened, and then just live in the question, what's up? And remember, go back to the, here was what I was aware of. Can you tell me about it? And then before you respond, before you get on the defensive, because that wastes your time and your energy. Say, you know, can you tell me more? What else is that? How is that happening? So if they say, well, I've noticed you're a jerk, you're a horrible spouse, you're a horrible employee, you're a horrible boss, whatever, say, tell me more. How are you seeing that? What's up for you there? And write it down. Because that's going to be your best clue. And as long as you're open to at least hearing the feedback, you don't have to accept it, but you have to hear it. Then all of a sudden you're going to say, huh, this is a big deal to this person. Now, if they come in and they yell at you, you say, you know, you get all the information you can out of them, and then you say, wow, this is taking me by surprise, which is the truth, right? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I give you a good, well-reasoned answer. I want to put as much thought into it as you have. Mm-hmm. And I respect what you just told me. Can we meet again today at 3? Can I talk to you tomorrow about this after I've slept on it?
Yeah.
I have meetings in 5 minutes. So that's what you do if, you know, they shock you. So the very first thing was ask, and then seek knowledge. You know, tell me more, what's going on? And then you don't have to know the answer. You just have to know what's next.
Right.
What's your next best request? Wow, that is a lot. Thank you for sharing that with me. Would it make sense for us to talk about this, you know, later tonight? Mm-hmm. Would it make sense for me to really think about this and for us to discuss it tomorrow? Mm-hmm. You know, so just know what you have to do next, and that'll help you get through it. Because know that, you know, if you've been observing this for 3 months, it's hitting the other person cold.
Yeah.
It's brand new information.
That's true. Yeah.
They need to think through it too, or it may be hitting you cold, and you may hear something startling that you didn't know, and you say, you know, I really want to think through what you just said, and then ask them for just the agreement to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also good advice to not let it fester, because, you know, it builds up, and, you know, all of a sudden it gets to the point where it can get very confrontational and heated, and, you know, all that bad stuff. That's really useful advice. I want to wrap it up soon, but I suppose, well, one of the things we didn't I know that you've coached people, or you coach people on confidence, which I wonder maybe to touch on before we go.
Sure.
In terms of how people can build their confidence in, whether it's to ask for things or make presentations or have difficult conversations or communicate mm-hmm. more effectively. You often hear that, you know, fake it till you make it kind of advice around
I confidence. Disagree.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I disagree. I think you build it.
Right.
You right. build it till you get to where you're going to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether you have a Toastmasters group or something like that, mm-hmm. a Rotary Club, whatever your club is, mm-hmm. that you can get in front of people, go there on the communication skills and just practice, practice, practice. Mm-hmm. Why? Because, again, that same adrenaline, that same feeling of uncertainty, it's all the same. Mm-hmm. Whether you're making a huge presentation or just one-on-one, get used to doing that. Have a friend tape you and just watch yourself. So that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, video you doing it. That's one. The second is, again, those little mini asking tasks. Just
yes,
go out and say, I'm going to ask three
yeah.
times. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask three mm-hmm. times today. I'm going to make an outrageous request for me three times, and I'm going to live with whatever it is. I'm going to ask to speak to the manager, and I'm going to point out, you know, ask for the manager, see what the whole store does, right? Mm-hmm. Or the whole business, and then compliment a worker that's really been helpful.
Right, right.
So ask to start speaking to those people in authority, because a lot, oftentimes they scare you. And then the other thing is, if you can ask yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen here?
Yeah.
And can
yeah.
I live with it?
Yeah.
You know, worst case, it really. I used to be so afraid, you know, and it was so funny because people say, you are so confident. And I thought, no, I'm not. Right. But what you need to do is, what's the worst that can happen? Well,
yeah.
I could trip and embarrass myself. I could say the wrong thing. Okay. Can I live with that? Sure, I can. What would help me not do that?
Yeah.
Practice a little bit more, whatever.
I love that technique. And I've talked about it before, the sort of power of negative
yes.
visualization, or they sometimes it's called a pre-mortem in a big
yes, exactly.
a big project,
exactly.
And you ask, well, what's the worst that can happen? And I think you find two yeah. things. One
what
is
we
that
do?
Yeah, you think, well, that wouldn't be nice, but you could get through it. And then the second thing
exactly.
you do is like, well, what can we do to prevent it? So it's
yes.
it's actually a very useful
the pre-mortem.
Technique.
It's great. I've heard Dan Pink again speak about it, but it's also if you can put down what are all the different objections someone might have.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then do I have a response?
Yeah. Yeah.
And at least you've heard them. And I think that's it. We need to prepare as much as we can And then we can be really in the moment when it's something that they, because you're always going to get a surprise, pleasant or negative. You're always going to get a surprise. But if you've prepared for everything else, then you can just live in the moment and go, yeah, thought about that, thought about sure. that one. Oh, that's
yeah.
new.
Yeah.
Huh. And then you can always go to that ask. Well, tell me about yeah. that, yeah. you know. And one little trick on that, mm-hmm. Ben, when you get shocked like that, no matter what you're doing, mm-hmm. you can always say, what would you do if the roles were reversed? Or what would you ask if you were in my position? Or what do people ask when they're sitting in this chair or they're making this kind of a phone call? Mm-hmm. You'll be shocked at how many people will walk you through a better deal than you thought you could get.
Right, right.
Ask them.
Yes. That's great. That's wonderful. Linda, this has been fabulous. I think my listeners are going to get a lot out of it. Very, very informative and enjoyable. Before we go, where can people find more about you and the work that you do and possibly connect with you on social media and any other and all those great places?
Yeah, terrific. Well, your members, you all, there is a bonus page on askoutrageously.com. Mm-hmm. So go to that website. You can go to all the book links if you'd like, but there is a bonus section if you scroll down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's got the TEDx talk. Listen to that. And then go to that bonus section and get in there and download the scripts you can use and some of the tools. And that's all free to you. And then the other thing you can do is there's all sorts of contact ways there, but if you want to be on my e-tips that I send out once a mm-hmm. month, that bonus page will sign you up for that. If you don't want it, you can cancel it. Just bookmark that bonus page. So that's probably the best. And then Linda at lindaswindling.com. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
But I just go play on Ask Outrageously, see what you do. I'd love to hear about it. We've got Facebook links and LinkedIn and stuff. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you ask for. Ask three times outrageously.
Right.
Just three times. Right. You know, in the next 24 hours, and let Ben and me know, you know, how did you do? Because we're really curious. Go take a little bit of a risk.
Well, I'm inspired. I'm going to ask some more, you know, really famous people to come and talk to me on my podcast.
One of the things
though that does happen is you sometimes don't hear anything, right? It's the same thing as applying for a job. I'm gonna apply for this this job, and if you don't get that feedback, then it's difficult. But I'm inspired. I'm definitely gonna experiment with this.
Well, good. And I'll give you one more. It's a double dog dare. That's a Texas thing. You've been dared now.
Okay.
Double dog.
Double dog dare. Yes. Yes. I double dog dare you. I've heard that in movies.
Double dog.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever told me that.
Yeah, it's a risk, man.
Yeah.
You got a double dog
double
dare.
Double dog dare. Okay. Got it. Yeah. I've grown up with I double dare you. That I get. But double dog, that's upping the stakes.
Dog.
That sounds serious. Cool. Linda, this has been fabulous. Thank you very much for joining
me.
We'll definitely stay in touch. I'll ask my listeners to connect with you. I'll put everything that we talked about and how they can find you in the show notes as well. So so they can find all that good stuff. So
right,
thank you,
guys,
you so
ask
much.
Outrageously. All right. Take
Sounds
care. Thanks
good.
Again, Ben.
Thank you. So if there's something you want to ask of someone, now you know what to do. And I'd love to hear from you in terms of what happens. So what is it that you're going to ask? Who are you going to ask? And what ends up happening? Drop me a note. Let me know. allthingsrisk@gmail.com is the best place to do that. Or if you're even a little bolder, you can drop a comment on this episode's page at allthingsrisk.co.uk. And as always, if you enjoy the show, if you enjoyed this episode, please share. Share to your heart's content. I would be grateful. Leave a rating or a review on iTunes in particular. That helps a lot as well. We will definitely be back in 2 weeks' time, and we may be back with a shorter episode next week as well. If you don't want to miss anything, subscribe. allthingsrisk.co.uk gives you the best ways of doing that. Until then, and as always, don't forget, risk is life.